Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends.
Walking out of a tunnel, you're scared shitless, you're excited, there's 20,000 people, you're like, you know, I might win tonight, I might die tonight, like, I've broken my rib, I've broken my hand, my nose multiple times, jaw. So there's definitely those aches and pains, concussions.
I'm like, man, there's so many people who probably he didn't realize were actually cheering him on to stop. So it was an interesting dance. But yeah, I mean, I was at hospitals with him, and it's been a huge heartbreaking part of my life is watching someone you love in pain.
How I've started to get healing and getting off all those medications was through more natural remedies, right? And I'm not talking about holding crystals and humming it away.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like real functional medicine.
Giving your body what it needs to do the job that it's designed to do on its own. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Travis Makes Friends. Today, I'm making two friends, one of whom I've actually known kind of on and off for the last 4 or 5 years, and her name is Angie Lee. And then her brother, Mike Lee, who I had the privilege of meeting for the first time when we had this conversation a little while ago back in Austin. So the way I know Angie is I came across her content, like I said, 5, 6 years ago, because she had a podcast, and I was when I was first starting my podcast. And I saw her do a collaboration with somebody that I knew and just really liked her stuff. She's just very genuine, very authentic, very like raw and honest. She also is a fan of comedy. She fills her free time by doing comedy sketches on Instagram and different things like that. But she grew a really big brand just behind throwing her own live events, doing her own masterminds, having the podcast, doing some lives, and just helping women become better versions of themselves and feel more fulfilled in their lives, different things like that. And then Mike enters the picture because her and Mike, brother and sister duo, decided to start a CBD company because Mike is actually a former professional boxer who had actually astoundingly great record when he was professional fighting and, you know, fought in front of crowds at MGM. At Madison Square Garden, sold out crowds of people that came to watch his fights and things. So he, after leaving that world, was just in chronic pain from getting beat up for a living for a decade and a half. And so he was looking for solutions to that chronic pain and came across CBD. And so Angie and Mike ended up coming together and using kind of Mike's athletic background and performance background, and then Angie's background in online marketing and personal branding and all the things that she was working on, they came together and formed a company called Soul CBD, which is now doing extremely well. Make a lot of different CBD products. They just launched their first THC gummy. It's infused with Delta-9 THC. So in this episode, we actually talk about the difference between Delta-9 and like the loophole of why you can ship Delta-9 through like across states, because it's, you know, it's still not federally legal. And so shipping anything besides Delta-9 would be illegal. But Delta-9, for some reason, gets around those rules. We talk about that a little bit. We talk about some of the in-depth pieces of cannabinoids and what they can do for your body in terms of sports recovery, making you feel better and things like that. But we also talk a lot about self-improvement. We talk a lot about mental performance. We talk a lot about raising a family. It was on the forefront of Mike's mind because he has a new addition to his family. It's only a few weeks old. And then I'm a, you know, fairly new dad myself over the last few years. So we honestly had a really great conversation. And this is one of those times where when I left, I feel like, man, I genuinely made a couple of really good friends here. We just saw eye to eye on quite a few things, able to challenge each other on a couple of other things. And I just felt like it was a really great conversation. So without any further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Mike and Angie Lee. What's up, guys? Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Do it. Let's make some friends.
I'm glad you said we were brother and sister, because we did have an incident once where someone thought we were married. And so I love that you cleared that up.
Yeah, thanks for that.
We got to do it right off the bat, or else it'd be some weird tension in here for like a little while, you know?
Yeah. They were like, how long have you been married? We were like, zero. Negative 0 years.
Zero research.
With the host thought that?
Yeah. And we kind of look the same. So that's kind of where I was like, ooh,
oh, no.
Then I made like a hillbilly joke and it just didn't land well. So.
Went south real fast.
Yeah, like, how'd you guys meet?
Yeah, you know? My mom's house.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
My mom's house. We were pretty young.
Our mom's house.
Like 0 years old when we met.
It was so funny that the whole time I couldn't get off my mind. So appreciate that.
Of course. So let's go back. Let's go back to mom's house. You know, 5-6-year-old Angie and Mike. What was life like for you? I'll start with Mike and then move to you, Angie.
Yeah, we grew up in Chicago.
Who's older?
I'm older. I'm 36, and I don't know if she wants to say her age, but she is younger than 36.
Decrepit.
Yeah.
Yeah, 36, I'm 33.
Yeah, we were always really close, grew up in Chicago. You know, I had a sports background, so did Angie. And for me, that really took off at a young age. I think our dad especially really pushed us into sports, and so for the longest time, I thought it was going to be baseball, but it ended up being boxing. I was thrown into a boxing ring at 8 years old. And fast forward, you know, I'm 20 years old, fighting in the amateurs. I got signed by Bob Arum in Top Rank, which was a dream come true for me. You know, it was like getting a call from the New York Yankees, basically, because they had signed Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, De La Hoya. And so my career started at a young age, and I ended up finishing my career with 22 fights. Fought for a world title and won a couple titles and a lot of ups and downs throughout that we can get into it. And Angie was along for that ride during it. But
so basically boxing. That was your childhood.
My childhood was boxing. My childhood was being, I don't want to say forced, but being pushed into things and being given love through achievement. We're going to go deep real fast here, but which I think has a blessing and a curse, and allowed me to become one of the best athletes in the world in my sport. But now as I step back, retired, and you know, I have my own son now, definitely kind of a lot of lessons learned in how that can be really dangerous, showing a child love and giving them praise only through their accomplishments rather than their effort. And so, you know, double-edged sword there. And I think Angie probably felt that a little bit too, in terms of what pushed her and motivated her. But looking back now, I'm grateful, but also a lot of lessons learned.
So you were also playing a ton of sports, the whole family's kind of athletic.
Yeah, I feel like our dad really wanted, I think my dad probably wanted me to be a boy. Part of him, right? So I think that there was this level of like, oh, get into sports and be successful at sports and then get into business. And so I just kind of followed that natural journey. But yeah, I was a gymnast and then a sprinter. But I'm really grateful for athletics. I didn't do it to the level that Mike did, but athletics, I mean, I think is one of the greatest things that your kids can do, or anybody should be doing. It teaches you so much about your wellness, your health, your body discipline, so many of those things. So
yeah,
I started out as a gymnast, and then I did track. Then I went to college for a bit, even though I always kind of knew I probably wasn't the ideal person for college. I always had an idea that I wasn't probably going to finish college. And so while I was in college, this is 2019, 2020. So this is before the internet was what it is now, with social media, online marketing, influencers, things like that. So, but it was almost like the precipice, like right before it. So I had this feeling like, all right.
Wait, when you were in college?
Yeah, yeah.
What year did you say?
2019. Or sorry, 2009.
I was like, wait a second. That
yeah.
Like
oh my God. Did I say 2019? Oh my God.
It's like, you were 29?
You're like, wait, you're.
Like, I'm doing the math.
Not the best at math. But...
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was like, what do you mean?
Okay.
So 2009, 2010. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking the ninth.
On the same page. Now. Yeah. Yeah.
2010. The typical story of knowing I didn't want to be there. Went to either do broadcast journalism or be a dietitian. I was obsessed with wellness. Also loved speaking. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll be Katie Couric. Maybe I'll be on the news, even though I don't know shit about the weather or sports. But I will talk about whatever, read a prompter. Yeah. And I'm in these classes and I'm miserable. And I'm like, this can't be it. And then I asked the girl next to me how much I would make if I was a dietitian working like 80 hours a week. And she told me, and I looked at her and I said, oh, hell no, I'm out here. I'm out of here. I'm like, I'm out. I love salmon. I can't do this. My life is way too expensive for this shit. And I would be in my classes. I literally remember being in class and I started a Blogspot. That was when Blogspot was cool. And I would be replying to people. And it was like three people. It was people on campus, my personal training clients, and I'd be like, yeah, girl, keep doing those push-ups. Like, I was just building community without knowing what I was doing. But it was more interesting than chem class. So I was creating content and posting videos and workout tips and wellness tips. And I just wanted to do that more because I didn't want to be in class. And that's really when it sparked me that there was this ability to make money on the internet in other ways. And so that's when I dropped out. And then it kind of started this whole journey of entrepreneurship, of podcasting, speaking, courses, physical products, digital products. And it kind of all started from that day of me saying, I got to do something else. I have to figure something else out because I know I'm not employable. And so that was really the journey. Now, Mike went to Notre Dame. He was able to actually go to school and get good grades. he's the more intelligent child. But
wait, so you were in school at the same time that you got signed to
Right after,
I basically got signed right after I graduated.
Okay.
There was an offer about a semester before I was going to get signed, and I knew I wanted to get my degree. So basically right after I graduated, I went straight into camp. They brought me down to Houston, Texas, and I had my first pro fight within, 4 months, I think.
What did your guys' parents do?
My dad was a serial entrepreneur, constantly just trying to start a business, fail, we went through bankruptcy when we were young. It took a long time for him to finally kind of make it. He was a high school dropout, and both our parents from inner city Chicago. My mom graduated high school, though I think she was the smarter one of the two. But my dad, extremely ambitious, right? So constantly hustling, trying to start things, and just telling the family, like, trust me, like, I'm going to do this. We're going to make it. And until he finally did, and he started a business, selling refurbished technology. So they would refurbish computers, POS, point of sale devices and whatnot. But I think that's how we really got the entrepreneurial bug, because no matter what, he always instilled in us to just go for it in many ways. I mean, I literally risked my life in front of, thousands and millions on TV. And so that type of like having a very high risk tolerance was embedded in us very, very early on.
Yeah. And you guys kind of experienced the ups and the downs with him, where it was like, oh, we have money and now we don't have money. And then we have money and now we don't have money.
Yeah. You know what's interesting though? I'm now realizing this is he wasn't really sharing it with us. And I think sometimes now, I mean, you guys are parents, I'm not yet, but I think it's important to almost share it with them, the journey of like, hey, buddy, I'm not doing well right now. This is why. And hey, I'm going to try this new thing. It was, we kind of knew about it, but not really. There wasn't really this transparent conversation around like, hey, I'm really struggling, but you know what? I'm going to figure it out. We didn't really get to see the ups and downs. It was kind of just like, what is dad doing now? And so I think I would have liked that as much as I think it's important to take your kids along the journey so they can see the entire process of what it really feels like to be an entrepreneur. Because it's not every year, every season is awesome. It comes with a lot of shit. And so I think it would have been cool to actually see that. So it's interesting you brought that up because I've been thinking of that recently, of what a gift that would have been to see him even sit down and just say, hey, this is what's going on right now. This is why my sales are this. Mm. So then you can celebrate with your parents, and then you can also know what it's like to be in the low with them too, because that is life. And so I wish we would have kind of saw that more.
It is interesting.
Really talk to us about it a lot.
It is interesting as a parent. It's just like you want to protect your kids, but you also want to show them what life is like, I agree with that in a lot of ways. And I feel like my wife and I try to do that a little bit more with our kids, is just like talk to them more like they're adults because they're smarter than you think they are. You know what I mean? But also, you don't want to give them the stress of being an adult as a kid is the only thing. Is like, you don't want to bring them in and be like, hey, we're struggling right now. And like, share in our stress now, like you want them to live this like, hey, everything's okay. You're a kid. Yeah. Enjoy yourself. Have fun. Like, do dumb things and like beat on your sister. You know what I mean?
I mean, they're not your therapist. But right, they can be your friend in that you are like, hey.
But there is a lot of value in bringing them along.
Yeah.
The journey, yeah.
That must be tricky, yeah, yeah.
But in his defense and in my parents' defense, they gave us the life that they never had, right? Mm-hmm. So to your point, they shielded us from a lot of things that, you know, getting the cars getting repoed and things like that, that my dad would like make up stories. So I didn't really know. And so there is that kind of like, I don't know if I really wanted to know that at a young age. And also their hard work allowed us to have a life that they never had. So we have to be grateful for that now.
Yeah. And then our mom, she, in the beginning was, she had an at-home daycare. That's how she made money under table and made enough to keep us surviving while my dad was trying out things. So in the beginning, she was really the hero who was holding things down. And we woke up every day with 10 to 15 kids running around everywhere. And we thought they were our brothers and sisters probably. So our mom did that. And then when my dad made enough, she was a full-time mom and was really good at that. She crushed it. That's what she really wanted to do, is be there and be a mom. So,
And now she works in the business. Yeah. So it's a full
family. Oh, really?
And watches. Nice.
Full family business. Yeah. And is kind of my nanny.
Yeah. So she's crushing it again in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's tired.
That's a recent development too, right? How you said how old? 9 weeks?
Yeah. He's 9 weeks old. First child. His name's Luca.
How's that been?
It's exciting. It's a wild feeling. Just a lot of very surreal moments that people tell you about.
Yeah.
That, until you experience it yourself, you just don't know.
How was the birth room for you?
That was one of, and that's what I'm talking about. Really,
yeah. Mike loved it.
Surreal. Yeah, I mean,
wild experience.
I've had a lot of those moments where I've had to like calm myself down. I've gotten good at it. Right. I mean, walking out of a tunnel, you're scared shitless. You're excited. There's 20,000 people. You're like, you know, I might win tonight. I might die tonight. Like that feeling of like, okay, let me calm myself down. So I was literally doing those like breath work stuff in there. And Hannah, my girlfriend, didn't know I was doing that, but because internally I was freaking out, right? Freaking out, because I'd never seen anything like this. And like, so much props to women. Oh my God, what they go through and what happened. I just couldn't believe it. But I started bawling crying. It was one of the most, if not the most beautiful like moment of my life. And it's tough to describe. I mean, it's just one of those things you either experience or you don't. And you could read a book or watch a video or talk to somebody. It'll just never be the same.
Well, as a dad too, it's like
you have
your
one
baby.
Or how many do you have?
I have two.
Two. Oh, okay. How old are they?
Yeah. My son is 4. My daughter's 3.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, right.
Back to back.
Yeah. Back to back. So that was fun. When you're a dad, the pregnancy part is like, it's theoretical that you're having a baby.
Exactly.
Because you don't have, like, the mom gets to experience, like, the connection with the baby and, like, they're feeling it kick all the time. And, like, yeah, you can put your hand on her stomach, whatever, but it's, like, it's not the same thing. And then, like, all of a sudden, it's just, like, that's why the birthing room is so crazy. Because it's just, like, it goes from this theoretical thing, like, I'm having a baby, to be like, plop. It's just, like, this is a baby now. And you're, like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's, like, a real, it's, like, a... And then they just let you walk away with it. You know what I mean? That's wild to me.
You're like, see, like, have fun.
A couple hours later, we're out the door. Yeah, I'm like, they know we took this baby, right?
Yeah.
Like, we have a baby in our arms. Like,
they
didn't give us an instruction manual. You know what I mean?
I can see, like, as a man, that is so trippy. Because you're like, okay, I knew this thing was coming in 9-10 months. But then you're like, oh my God, this person, I have to make sure they're alive for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I just remember buckling him in his car seat, my son, the first time, because he's my oldest. And I was just like... It took me like 10 minutes because I was just like,
yeah, exactly.
Just like trying not to like hurt him. Like we're going over the speed bumps on the way home. It was just like slow down to 0 miles an hour. Just like, whoa, is he okay? Is everything all right?
Yeah.
And then you realize that, you know, babies are durable.
Yeah. You just throw them back there.
Yeah. I heard with the second child, like, everything is so different. Yeah. With the second child, you're basically like, they'll be fine. You know?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of immediate feet. Well, the positives about having two back to back like that is that you just went through it. So you remember a lot of the immediate people. Like I feel like if we had another baby right now, we might even be less prepared than we were the second time, because it's been several years since we've had a baby in the house.
That's
now,
funny.
You know? So, but yeah. Okay. So I want to get back into the story here. So you guys, where I was going with your parents thing. So there was never any pressure from them, it sounds like, to like go down a certain career path or do any, like when you were kind of figuring things out or you were leaving school to like create content online and whatever the hell that meant to your parents. Like, were they, how were they feeling during that time?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We kind of had similar but different experiences with this because we both did something that was unconventional. Obviously, he went to athletics and I'm doing this thing that now it's more popular, but
yeah.
I was like, no, there's a way to launch courses and events and podcasts and there's these things called sponsors. And I was like interested in it. And so I remember telling my mom, like, it's a thing and I'll figure it out. And she was like, all right. And I can remember the day I called her when I quit. I remember I told my counselor, I was like, I'm out. This shit's stupid. I'm out.
She was like,
wait, what are you going to do with your life?
You're like 19 or something.
I was like, post videos on the internet. She's like, dear God. Yeah, yeah. I remember she's like, see you later, ho. You know, she's probably like, okay, another one of these girls. But I was like, no, I'm going to figure this out. I can remember. I remember the elevator exactly where it was. I can remember going down, calling my mom. And I was crying because I was so happy that I was free. Because I, since kindergarten, have hated school. I've hated every day you wake up, you do the same thing, you have the bell, I hated all of it. And so I remember I was like, I'm done. She was like, I knew this call was coming since kindergarten, literally. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, I always knew with you. Like, we didn't want to maybe tell you, but I just always knew with you. Like, Mike, we thought he'd probably finish school, but you, like, we just had this feeling like it wasn't, your path is just going to be weird and different. And so, yeah, she knew. And she was like, just go fly, like figure it out and you'll figure it out. And so there was always this, like, obviously they wanted us to be happy and successful, but there was this flexibility of figure it out, yeah, whatever that looks like for you. So I do feel like we had the permission slip to be different,
yeah,
and not follow the rules of, okay, you go to college, you get good grades, and then you go work at a law firm, and then you, right, get married at this age. There's like these rules of happiness to life. And I think that we were never really told those, which is probably good. At least, right? Same for you. You felt like you could do whatever you wanted, even though, I mean, you went to Notre Dame, right? So most people who go to Notre Dame go and get like a fancy schmancy job, right?
Sure.
I mean, you went to Notre Dame. So it's like, to do that probably was hard too, because it's part of you is like, I'm not even going to use this part of this degree.
Yeah, just go
punch people in the face
for a living.
Yeah, like, okay.
What did you get your degree in?
Finance.
Okay.
I was just always good with numbers. But I loved boxing and I loved the adrenaline rush, and I won the Golden Gloves in my weight class and I started training in pro camps, and I just felt like, it sounds corny, but I knew in my gut that if I didn't go for it, I would always regret it. I knew I would be, you know, 90, 100 years old and just wonder what if. And that what if scares the death out of me. So
where do you think that foresight came from?
I've had a really weird, almost like morbid idea of mortality, mm-hmm, like even at a young age and to this day.
Are you guys religious at all?
We're not. Okay. I'm not. And maybe that's part of it, because I almost wish I was, because I'm not convinced that when I'm done on this earth that I go to heaven.
There's a
second shot. I don't really know.
I don't think anyone knows. But,
well, yeah, you know, when people have a lot of faith, it gives them comfort in that, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't have that comfort. And what that has allowed for me, for instance, when I drive by cemeteries, I actually like smile a little bit. And it's so weird.
It's not demented at all.
No, it's not demented at all. But it's like a morbid feeling of that's going to be me one day.
Yeah.
So I better make today count, and or I better do something I'm excited about.
Yes.
Not that other people feel like they're excited about.
And it puts risk into perspective for me is what it does a lot, is like when you look at life in terms of like 300 years from now, and you realize how completely non-existent and insignificant you are in the grand scheme of the universe and how long time has existed. Like why do things because other people want you to do those things instead of doing things that light you up or make you enjoy life or like put a smile on your face, you know, or like bring you closer to the people that you love or whatever. Just like, why? There's no logical conclusion to that to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause you go to some of those, you know, cemeteries and you look at the dates and it's like, you know, 1836 to 1884. Yeah. It's like, damn.
Yeah.
Like they're so far in the past that it's not even like close to being relevant to anything that's happening to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like they died before like 200 years, like before my great grandma was born. This person was already gone.
Wow.
And like that 50 years that they were on earth is the same amount of time of the 50 years that like I'm in the middle of living right now.
Yeah.
If I'm lucky enough to get to 50 and 80 and 90 and whatever else and beyond, you know? So yeah. Like we only got, you know, we only get a little bit of time here and it's not going to matter once it's done, you know? And the people that you care about right now that whose like opinions are forming the habits that you're deciding to live your life by, they're not even going to be at your, by your deathbed. They're not going to be at your funeral. Like they're not, they're insignificant. Like, ants compared to, you know what I mean? Like just nothing matters in that sense. So why not go for like what you want to like make, you know, make something out of your life. But that's why I asked that question. Cause I'm curious about what drives that point of thinking, because it's well documented that delayed gratification is one of the core common denominators of success, right? Mm-hmm. Like the marshmallow test, everybody's familiar with. It's like, where, like, is that something that's just ingrained in you? Because I've always thought that way myself. It's just like, I'm always thinking about like, what does 90-year-old Travis think about this? Mm. You know what I mean? And if the answer is like, I will regret not having seen this through, then I do it. Even if it's super scary and super risky and puts a lot of stuff, you know, that I currently hold at risk. It's just like, yeah, but that's so scary to me, like to be at that point of life where you can do zero things about it and to be filled with this like utter feeling of like almost shame that you didn't go for something.
Yeah.
And why didn't you go for it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I feel like reason. When they interview people at the end, they always seem to have like the similar 3 to 4 things that they're all saying, right? Like I should have told more people I loved them. I should have been around those people. It's very like people relationship focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you should have went for things that I thought would, you know, were silly and stupid, but I wish I would have at least tried. And then so many people which is like one of my cornerstones of life is like fun. Like they were taking it so fucking seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like I literally go to a dance class once a week that there are girls who will tell me they don't want to go because they're just nervous to go dance in front of people. And I'm like, dude, that's the whole point. Like who cares? Like the whole point is to literally go and just like whatever happens, happens, you know? And even on the internet, it's like posting videos. I'm like, when I'm 90, you're right. I'm going to be like, I'm so glad I just said what I wanted to say. And I was just me. And so it is interesting that's one of the biggest regrets is people just, I think, took it so seriously. And then they weren't allowed to enjoy life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Cause when you're taking it so seriously, it's like, all right, we're all going to die. We're like, I always say we're these cucumbers rolling around on this ball. We're literally like 60% water. We're on a moving ball in space right now. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right.
I think we're here to just have fun and try things.
I'm not sure.
Getting deep.
I'm not sure if it's innate or learned, but I think for me in particular, it was definitely, as we mentioned, how I was raised, maybe how we were raised. And risk was just treated and seen differently.
Hmm.
So without even sitting down and my father explaining to me about risk and safety and whatnot, watching how he operated, watch him make money, lose money, watch him take risks, watch him be up and down, you know, violent sometimes, not violent other times. I think I learned a lot through that process and that gave me my risk appetite. So now as a father, I'm learning how many little things, even the energy I give, not just exactly what I say to my son, but the way that I operate, he's going to mirror me. He's going to mimic it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I got it from him. I'm less risky than he is, but also, you know, like I said before, it's a double-edged sword, right? It's a blessing and a curse, because that can also take you down a pretty dangerous path as well. So
what do you mean by that? Can you go into that a little bit more, because you mentioned that a little bit earlier as well?
You know, there's part of me that has regrets about boxing. My health has struggled, and actually is part of the reason why we started this company. In the end of 2012, early 2013, I was 12-0, undefeated, on top of the world. I just fought in Madison Square Garden in my last fight.
Wow.
I had a couple Super Bowl commercials with Subway, the restaurant. And so it was just like, I felt immortal, and I started to get really sick and my body started breaking down. And I spent almost 2 years in and out of hospitals, later getting diagnosed with an autoimmune disease.
Wow.
And even to this day, I still deal with concussion issues, autoimmune issues. I've had Lyme disease for years.
Wow.
It was just kind of like a whole thing of, you know, my immune system shutting down on top of concussion issues. And it's why I wear these glasses sometimes. They're migraine glasses.
Were those other health issues tightly related to boxing?
What I think now, looking back at it, well, there definitely were boxing related, right? I've broken my rib, I've broken my hand, my nose multiple times, jaw. So there's definitely those aches and pains, concussions. I think what happened with the autoimmunity, and this is very common for men in their mid-20s when they start to get autoimmune issues, is that I was in so much fight or flight, literally, that it was one small thing was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I think as much as I was enjoying life and really giving it my all and loving what I was doing, I think my body was in so much fight or flight and sparring and these massive moments where it just became too much. And not to get super woo-woo, but I'm an empath and I truly believe that and know that. And now as I look back on my career, there was always a disconnect because I loved competing, right? I loved sports, but I didn't like hurting people. But my job was to be the best in the world at hurting people.
Yeah.
And I was very good at it. And it had this weird disconnect between I'd feel great about knocking someone out, but then I'd also kind of feel terrible. And I think that tugging and pulling along with all the fight or flight and the media and the interviews and the TV stuff and the pressure with my dad and the pressure with my agent and just everybody, it just finally, my body started breaking down. So I ended up on 8 different medications at one point, addicted to painkillers, because once again, that should have been the time I retired at 27 or whatever it was. Instead, I was pressured to get back in the ring. You know, for many reasons. And also as part of my identity, you know, I wanted to prove
some
myself.
Internal pressure as well, not just external.
Exactly. A ton of internal pressure of like, this is not how I'm going to go out.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to go out on my shield. Like I'm going to get back in the ring. So I am proud of myself for getting back in the ring, but like, I'll never forget my comeback fight was on NBC national television in Philadelphia. I fought another undefeated fighter. And for the first time in my entire boxing career, I was more scared of getting hurt than losing. So every time I walked in the ring before that, amateurs and pros, I would rather get hurt than lose.
Yeah.
And for the first time, because of all that sickness and pain I'd gone through and just climbing to get back in the ring for this, my comeback fight, a big fight, the night before, I was so nervous. I remember pulling my dad to the side after we had some media and dinner. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And I was so scared. I was scared to death. And so I ended up winning that fight somehow, got in the ring. I did my thing, got a knockout. It just never felt the same. I had 8 more fights after that. And the feeling I got was just never the same. It was always more, I'm nervous for this. And I think it's everything I went through those 2 years in the hospitals.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even my last fight, I knew it'd be my last one. I could barely get through that training camp. We had to take days off. I had to hop back on some painkillers.
Wow.
Went down to a lower weight class.
Just because you were losing weight?
Yeah.
You did that on purpose or that was on accident?
Well, we had an opportunity to fight for the world title. So I fought the number one fighter in the world for the world title at 168 super middleweight. And then the winner was going to go fight Canelo Alvarez.
Oh, wow.
So for me, it was a huge opportunity. I knew in my heart, even if I won that fight, I'm done. Like I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of internal, external pressure, and kind of going back to the beginning of what I was saying, the double-edged sword, looking back now, I don't regret boxing and I don't regret going for my dreams and risking everything I risked. And even my last fight, getting knocked out and stopped and embarrassed in my eyes in front of a million people on TV, you know, and thousands at the MGM Grand. I don't regret that. I'll always go for it. I don't care about that. I'm proud of myself for that. I regret letting the external pressure and even the internal pressure of getting back in the ring after I got sick and having 8 more fights and another 5+ years in my career override what my gut was telling me. And my gut was telling me, you need to be done. This is enough. Your health is more important than money and accolades.
Yeah.
And now I bear the consequence of that because I deal with daily pain. I deal with headaches. I'm constantly seeing doctors and at the Amen Clinic and Carrick Institute and world renowned places. I bought a hyperbaric chamber. I'm doing everything because I want to live healthy and long, especially now that I have a son.
Yeah.
So there's this weird feeling of gratitude for everything I accomplished, but also regret and being scared of what the next, knock on wood, 50 plus years look like.
Sure.
If my health is like this now. So it's bittersweet in a sense.
Where were you, on all this, Angie, at the time? Like you, you know, you're working on your business, you're starting your career, and then seeing, like, are you going to the fights? Are you guys close at this time?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to the fights. I don't watch them though. Okay. I've watched them on the TV because it made it feel less real.
Okay.
She means the Jumbotron.
The Jumbotron.
Oh, you would.
Yeah, like if you were right, you'd be sitting there fighting, I would watch there versus, even though it's literally right next to me, because it felt more like, oh, this is just a person on TV, and I would be able to emotionally like separate myself.
Yeah.
A little bit more. I mean, there was a few seconds where I would look, but if it was just, it would cause me stress then. So I'm like, oh my God, I can't imagine the stress he's under. But then you're like, okay, but he has to do this, you know? So it was a lot. I think it was an up and down, right? It was a really interesting situation because so many times I wanted to tell him to quit, but then you can't tell someone when they're in it, they have to want to stop themselves, especially men. I mean, you guys put such an immense amount of pressure on yourselves to complete the thing that I started, right? I mean, that's part of being a man, and that can be really beautiful, and that can also destroy your lives in certain ways. So it's almost like this weird dance where I had to respect that it's his life, it's not mine, but then like wanted him to quit. And yeah, it was crazy. Even that last fight at the end, you know, going back to, we care so much what people think of us, right? And so there's this part of him that thought, I have to keep up this image, I have to keep fighting. But it's so crazy that the minute the fight ended, one of our family friends who, her husband actually was one of your trainers for a while.
He was my first trainer. His name was Ronnie Shields. He's like a, he's like a father to me.
His wife, who's known Mike for a while now and a huge support of Mike, turned around and looked at me, and I'll always remember it. And the minute the bell rang, she was like, I'm so glad that Mike is done. I'm so happy for him that he's free. And she made a joke and said, he's too good looking and articulate to be doing this anymore or something. And she looked at me, and I thought in that moment, like, I need to tell Mike this one day, because he needs to know that there are people actually, and this applies to any season of your life, anybody listening, that when you think that you need to keep going, but actually there's people who agree that like, this is the end of this thing. You know, like, please go to the next chapter of your life. Like, please turn the page. But we're so like controlled. We're like trying to control like that what we think is like the chapter we still need to be in. So it was cool, because I'm like, man, there's so many people who probably he didn't realize were actually cheering him on to stop. So it was an interesting dance. But yeah, I mean, I was at hospitals with him, and it's been heartbreaking. I mean, it would be a lie if I told you it has been, and you know, in certain seasons worse than, obviously, like he's healed in many ways now. But a huge heartbreaking part of my life is watching someone you love in pain. It's so hard. It's because you can't do anything sometimes.
Right. Well, and especially that in that context too, because it's not like he's the victim.
Exactly. And you want a
grown man making the decision to go do this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and something that you love. That's got to be the weird part, because like,
weird.
This has to exist solely in the microcosm of like combat sports specifically. Not to say that other sports don't beat you up or whatever, but you know, obviously that's not the goal of most sports, is to beat up the other person.
I feel like a lot of football players probably though deal with this.
Football,
like defensive linemen,
football,
right?
And hockey, there's got to be like some, you know, there's a lot of CTE issues, you know, for people coming out of those sports as well.
It's a niche. I always tell Mike, like, I've always encouraged him to keep talking about it and be open. And I'm so proud that he's been so open and vulnerable about it, because there's so many men out there who've been in that season of being an athlete, whether it's professional or went really long time being an athlete, and then they deal with the next life after, whether it's pain or the next career thing. And it's a whole niche and a whole world that people don't really want to talk about. And they're just very hush hush about, because they're dudes, right? But it's like, no, like, let's talk about this. You know,
what do you think you're going to have for your son, or encourage your son to do?
Golf.
So fun.
Chess.
He's going to play golf.
No, golf's too aggressive.
I told my wife the same thing.
Chess.
It's like, I was like, he can do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
In addition to golf. Like, golf will be
golf,
like
tennis.
You might have some back problems from swinging or something like that.
Swimming.
But like,
swimming can't be too painful.
Swimming, there you go.
Swimming, No, I think anything he wants, in and out of sports. I think I've learned so many lessons through that. I'm definitely going to teach him how to fight. I think there's an awesome confidence that comes with learning how to fight, protect yourself, protect people.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to push him into a ring at 8 years old.
Sure.
Continue that process. My brain wasn't even fully developed, you know,
right.
I'm getting hit. So yeah, it's a learning lesson there. When you were talking, I was just thinking, it's like the thing I kept kind of asking myself is like, how is the thing I love the most in the world also giving me so much pain?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I still can't answer that question. And it's been the toughest thing to
Isn't that life though? It's like, yeah. I'm sure parenthood is that you love this thing, but love is pain. Like, I love you so much that it's painful because I would hate to lose you. Like, isn't that what love is anything?
I feel like that's what
it's cheesiest.
It really is. It's cheesy because it's true. You know, a wife, your kids, like everything's that way, man. Like,
yeah,
the things that provide the most mm-hmm. happiness, the most fulfillment, the most love and joy are also the things that cause the most pain, the most struggle, the most, you know, late nights and can't sleep and I'm anxious and it's a business, you know, your business does the same thing.
Just sucks that his had to also be so physical, right? Which
it's the exaggerated effect.
Yeah, it's almost to the point where I think there's a degree where it wasn't healthy though because of the physical aspect of it for sure.
Yeah.
The mental part I think was great for you. It taught you probably so much mentally about fighting and bravery and courage, but it's like, damn, could you have done that with something that didn't physically?
Yeah. But I think there's a lot of modalities, and whether it's everything from CBD, THC, I've got a lot into like psychedelics and psilocybin. I got an opportunity to be a part of a documentary that ESPN put together.
Oh, cool.
It was the first time in ESPN's history that they did any type of piece on psilocybin, which was big, obviously, for Disney, who owns ESPN, to clear it.
Yeah,
and a handful of myself and some other ex-professional athletes, NFL guys, and big-time hockey players went out there. And the piece is called Peace of Mind. And we went out to Jamaica and did some psilocybin journeys, all facilitated with doctors. And they took our blood before and after. We did brain scans. And it was a really wild, incredible, a lot of ups and downs, but a beautiful thing that I got to experience. I got to witness some other guys that were there have some incredible breakthroughs, guys that had much worse concussions than myself. And guys who had, you know, were making millions of dollars, top draft picks on top of the world in their 20s. And now they're in their 30s with, money, but broken. Hmm. And so it was
money, if they're lucky, a lot of times
money, if they're lucky, without a doubt. And, but these guys were broken, and even myself in aspects of life, I feel broken. And so it was cool to kind of go through that. Not that it's fixing everything, but another tool in the tool belt to kind of help with CTE, with depression, with head injuries. And, I think the science is coming out, whether it be ketamine, MDMA, psilocybin, that it's starting to really help a lot of athletes and veterans and just everyday people.
Yeah. It's wild how long that stuff has been just kept under wraps.
Yeah. Have you done a lot of conversations on it yet?
Not a ton, not specifically about it, but like a lot of people that I talk to will have like conversations or side conversations, or it'll come up in conversation like this.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Because it's just more and more, I think it's really just the access to information, you know. It's just before social media, before podcasts, YouTube, before all these other sources of information, you only had what they told you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why everybody just, you trust your doctor, you trust the news, you trust these agreed upon sources of truth.
Yeah.
And what they say goes, and there's no other form of getting information. And so now we all have access to a lot more information from people who are equally as or more qualified than the people that we were listening to before.
Totally.
And I think that I think it's going to be a generational thing, you know. It's just, especially like just our parents' generation, I think, was just like drugs equals bad. You know what I mean? Like any drug, doesn't matter, it's bad. For some reason, alcohol kind of always slipped through.
Yeah,
it was super weird. I don't understand that one. You know what I mean?
Even though like the greatest visionaries and artists of those times, this 50s and 60s and 70s, the Beatles, everybody was on drugs, but yet they're supposed to be bad. But
drugs,
of the greatest things that have been invented were probably somebody just on a mountain on
tripping.
LSD.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, maybe it's not the worst. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, not that anyone should go
through
that.
They were at least smoking weed. You know what I mean? Like, true. There was just like...
Everyone was more chill then too, probably.
Yeah, right. But for some reason, alcohol, they're just like, alcohol is good.
Yeah,
all other things are bad. It's like, what? Alcohol is like...
The worst for
it's
you.
It's like, like objectively worse.
Literally poison.
That's terrible. Like,
these other four options. What are you talking about?
Yeah, like mushrooms cannot kill you. I mean, you could do a lot. And Mike did a lot there, but you could technically do 5-8 grams and you're not going to die, even though you might feel like you are and have a horrible trip.
Yeah.
But alcohol, there's a point where you would if you kept drinking.
Right.
So it's interesting that conversation isn't had. And we talk about this with CBD, you know, CBD, our regular gummies, you could And those two, you could technically right now eat the entire thing and there's zero toxicity level.
Oh,
I bet on my life you will not die. Now, well, you might get super sleepy, maybe, might feel super zen, cool, okay.
You get pretty
but
high.
Like, you're going to be fine. Now, you can't say that about Tylenol, aspirin,
right?
Anything you go pick up down the street at CVS, you would die if you ate the entire 60 count, 30 count. So that's what's really nice about what we believe about plant medicine and these new alternatives is there's zero toxicity level. So I tell people, I'm like, dude, the worst thing that's gonna happen is you just won't feel anything.
Right.
But you're totally fine. It's not gonna hurt your liver.
Totally.
You're not gonna.
There's not a list of 48 side effects
that include
like death and cancer and shit like that.
I love
that.
Those it's commercials.
Like, yeah. It's like, yeah. I think I'll just stick with the rash on my neck.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's like, always a I think rash. I'm all right. You might die. You're like, right. Dude, I have psoriasis.
You could lose your kidney.
Yeah.
And it's like,
like,
whoa,
you might
what?
Kill yourself. You're like, I'll have psoriasis. I'm fine.
Or, yeah, it's like the antidepressant medications, like side effects may include depression. You're like, what?
Anxiety. Suicide.
I know, it's so sad.
Like, wait a second.
I have those. I'm trying to get rid of those.
I like how sometimes they'll say, like, in rare cases, they'll list like 12 of them that are just like, these are like the common ones.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, in rare cases, you might die. Like, suicide is a chance. And you could end up in the hospital.
There's got to be another way. So that's what we're grateful for is that we've been part of that. And if even in a small way, we've helped thousands of people already. But like even just waking people up, because it's always step one. You got to meet your customer where they're at. So step one is like, just be open to at least CBD. And then if that takes you in a place where one day maybe, you're doing psychedelics and whatnot, who knows? In a therapeutic assisted way, that's fine. But just having the conversation of like, getting DMs from girls that are like, hey, I'm now taking our gummies for period cramps instead of Midol. Like, that makes me happy because I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. I feel like this woman at least now is open-minded to something more holistic, you know?
Yeah. So I think with all this, you just have to follow the money. And, you know, big pharma, FDA, all these big bodies are just incentivized financially.
Completely, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even when we were talking about with the painkillers that you said you had some addictions to early on, like, that stuff is egregiously, like, just awful. The when you look at the behind the scenes of like the opioid crisis.
Oh, I feel
that
so good though that it's so addictive. I could see how people would.
Yeah, you feel on top of the world. Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I've had surgeries and stuff. When I played a lot of basketball growing up, so I had reconstructive surgery when I was in college on my ankle. And I mean that stuff's great. I could totally like it was one of the things that I've taken where I've been like, I could definitely see how easy it would be to get addicted to this.
Exactly.
Like, and I had to stop it. I was just like, I cannot get a refill on the prescription because if I do that, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not even just a psychological addiction. It's a literal physiological addiction. It's an addictive substance that hooks you. It's so bad. It's like an insidious thing.
It's wild.
You know, I had Brandon Novak on the show yesterday, who's on Jackass, and he has this whole story. He's sober now, like 9 years. And he was like, just laid out this whole scenario where he's talking about, he's like, just imagine you're a kid, you know, you have the lacrosse scholarship, whatever, you get injured, you go to the doctor's office, the medical doctor writes you a prescription for this thing, you take it for 30 days, whatever. And then like after 30 days is up and you don't have a prescription anymore, it's like, oh, well, that was actually really helpful. I'm still in a lot of pain, you know, and it felt really great. So your buddy down the street has some, you know, extra pills from his prescription. You start buying them at 50, 60, 70, 80 bucks a pop.
Yeah.
And then that guy runs out and you still want the high. You run into this seedy guy down or, you know, that's in your neighborhood. And he's like, what are you doing buying Percocet at 80 bucks a pop? You could buy this heroin for 10 bucks and get like five times as high. And it was like the first time, like I never realized like the pricing discrepancy between those things. Cause I'd never been in that world, thankfully. But it was just like a wild story to be like, no shit.
Yeah.
Like no duh that happened.
Yeah.
Like what are we doing here?
Wow.
Like these just evil people up at the top that are just profiting off of destroying the lives of millions of people.
100%.
Yeah. And there's good doctors out there too, of course, but.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about the doctors
the joke
even
of like
necessarily.
Yeah.
I'm talking more about like the Sackler family.
Oh,
and
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah. None of them went to jail.
Yeah, that's wild.
They paid a fine on the profit they already made.
Yeah. And now they're chilling with hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, probably billions.
Yeah.
From doing that's the stuff I'm talking about where it's just like that's just sickening. Like you are sick people.
It is.
You know.
I think, you know, modern medicine has had obviously incredible advances and it's phenomenal for more like emergency and abortive, but for me in particular, especially when you deal with autoimmune or chronic illness.
Yes.
Western medicine didn't do it for me.
Yes.
It just doesn't. There will be times that I will hop on a prescription if I need to or whatever. I think that there's an important part for that. But for me, how I've started to get healing and getting off all those medications was through more natural remedies, right? And I'm not talking about holding crystals and humming it away.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like real functional medicine.
Giving your body what it needs to do the job that it's designed to do on its own.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's all. That's like 100%. Literally all it is. You know, that it's, that's why it's so crazy when people call it woo woo and stuff. It's just like, no, it's just, that's just your body's like goal is to be healthy. It does a lot of this stuff on its own.
Wants to stay alive.
It's just that we prevent it from doing those things by pouring terrible shit into our body all the time and treating it like garbage. Yeah. That's why 70% of Americans are obese. You know what I mean? And that's like, that's one. I might get canceled for this one, but that's why.
Dude, being canceled is the best. Go for it.
With it's so hard for me to trust when my doctor is like egregiously overweight.
Yeah,
it's just like what?
Yeah, for sure.
You can't.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with
you. Can't be sitting here telling me about how to be healthy.
Yeah,
you know
he doesn't look healthy or feel healthy.
Yeah, you can't. What are you doing, man? Yeah. Like you are 100-something pounds overweight.
Right,
and you're a doctor. Like,
yeah,
you're supposed to be at least somewhat healthy. Like you don't got to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, come on, like put some effort into your own profession.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah, a lot of nurses, a lot of our customers are nurses who are up and are eating McDonald's at 3 a.m. They got their fourth shift. I mean,
yep.
And that's the wellness industry that she's in, or that's the health industry, right?
So
the irony is that sometimes those people need the most help. And
yeah,
I think the biggest thing now that I'm even exploring that I think a lot of people are getting into now is health is so much deeper than like, it's so much deeper than what you eat. And I don't mean this in like a woo-woo cheesy way, but the psycho aspect of it, like the psycho, the psychomental or whatever they call it, basically like your mental health, right? And your relationships and how you manage stress. I think the biggest thing, and Mike experienced it himself in a massive way, is the CNS, is the central nervous system. Yes, our bodies are so intelligent and they want to be alive, but they want to feel safe and they want to feel like they can thrive in that environment that is in the parasympathetic. So that's the biggest thing I'm even focusing now in my life, and Mike's always working on too, because like I've done all the supplements, I've done all the workouts, I've done all the biohacks, but the greatest one ever is like, can you regulate when you're stressed? Can you regulate your central nervous system when you're freaking out? Because that's bad for everything. I mean, hormones.
Yeah.
Happiness.
I mean, so that's really also what happened to Mike too during those times. You have to realize it wasn't just the physical being punched. His body was in what is called fight or flight. Now, you don't have to be an athlete to experience that. You could be in the car right now listening and you just got into a huge fight with your spouse, or you have a meeting you're going to that's so stressful, or money stress or relationship stress. I mean, those are what's also deteriorating our bodies too. So now when we talk about health, I think it's important to say to people like, dude, there's a lot more than just what you eat. It's so much more, right? Don't you agree now? I feel like I see health so differently than I did even a few years ago. I'm like, honestly, it's so much more than what you eat.
Yeah.
It's like how you manage stress and sleep and stuff.
I totally agree. I think everything between like the breath work and the meditation and cold plunge sauna, I mean, it's just whatever works for you.
Sure.
You know, and I think it has a trickle down effect.
Exactly.
It's why I fell in love with CBD and even THC, other cannabinoids, you know, magnesium, all these different all natural tools to kind of help calm down your nervous system, because it had that trickle down effect to where all of a sudden I was like, okay, when my anxiety is lower, all of a sudden my inflammation's lower. All of a sudden my gut feels better. All of a sudden my broken hand feels better. So when you can get into that parasympathetic, which I believe that a lot of the tools that we have, not only with soul, but just with, you know, that are free, like the breath work, like those things I mentioned, it has a trickle down effect on your health. I know that anecdotally firsthand. And then that's really what a lot of our customers say. So that's what's so interesting about CBD, and also confusing is like, why are people always question, how does it help with anxiety and pain and also inflammation? And it's really for that reason. The way it's activating the endocannabinoid system is putting your body out of fight or flight and into that parasympathetic rest and digest, so you can heal finally. So it's helping your body do what it's supposed to do. So that's why I've always been a fan of it. And it helped me get off a lot of medications. And now we've had the opportunity to help thousands of people.
Yeah.
Well, the more you do that type of stuff too, the easier it is to make better decisions around other parts that affect your health, like other areas that affect your health. It's easier to make better decisions to eat healthier when you feel better. You know what I mean? Like it's way easier to eat like shit when you're the nurse who just, you know, is trying to get through their next
14-hour shift and you got 7 minutes to scarf down some food and not a ton of money left. You know what I mean? Like, just if you're in that situation, it's difficult to make a good decision to go like cook something up that's going to be really healthy for you. And you know what I mean? But when you're in a, in the parasympathetic state, when you are, you know, doing your best to put at bay the stress and the, you know, cortisol levels in your blood and all those things, like tend to make better decisions. And then when you make those better decisions, it makes it easier to get into that state next time. And then it makes it easier to make better. It's like this, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy, so to speak,
that exactly
just lets you continue to be healthier, you know, over time.
Yeah. And it's ups and downs. And so, you know, I say this to anyone listening that is dealing with chronic illness, like I have still a lot of bad days and then I have great days. Right. And it's two steps forward, one step back and two steps forward, sometimes three steps back. But it's just like having that resilient mindset, I think, is massive when you're going through chronic pain. And so it's just like, sounds cheesy, but like, don't give up. Don't give up and keep turning over every single rock to see what's going to work for you.
Yeah.
That's what I've done for the last, you know, decade that I've dealt with autoimmune and pain and concussions. Is something works for me for a while, I feel happy about it, then maybe it doesn't, and I'm just turning over the rock. And when I say that, I mean like seeing what new modality or what new practice can help me. And so I think that is one thing that boxing definitely taught me. There were moments when I could have quit, you know, and boxing taught me to get knocked down and get back up. And I'm proud for that fact, that through depression, through anxiety, through some really ugly thoughts, whether it be from concussions or whatever it is, I haven't given up and I'm still sitting here.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a win that I want to constantly tell people, is that as shitty as that day feels, like you can't give up. You got to get back up and keep trying for, you know, that next day to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I give myself permission to just like mark that day as an L. I feel like that made me feel better at some point, you know, because sometimes you're fighting so much and then you, you know, you're just running against obstacle, just like one of those days that just like keeps trickling, just keeps, you know, seems like you're doing everything with somebody spraying a fire hose in your face the whole day. You know, you're just trying to like, just get through. And then at some point along the way, I just kind of realized like, you know what, tomorrow's a new day. I think I'm just going to shut off my computer, sit down, enjoy some time with my family, and go to bed early, you know? And then I'm going to get up tomorrow and we're going to take another crack at this
thing. That's grace, right? And that's what grace is, right?
Yeah.
Like if you are religious or whatever, people
being
are saying,
kind to yourself.
Grace, yeah. Because if you're beating yourself up every day, it's almost going to make it worse. So
you're the only person that you would ever allow to do that. That's the thing that like made me switch it at some point. Was just like, if anybody else treated me like I treat myself sometimes, like to your point earlier about like guys being hard on themselves, I'm sure women are the same way, but almost this added pressure as a man to just like, you know, grit your teeth and show up and whatever. And it's just like, I would not treat anybody else the way that I treat myself. And I would not let anybody else treat me the way that I treat myself. So why am I letting myself treat myself that way? That's not a healthy relationship with me. You know?
Yeah. I think for me, it's that cemetery analogy, that knowing one day I'll be there, and it's like a day before that happens, will I care about this moment right now?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is big enough that I will care and then let's act on it.
Mm.
But 99% of the shit is like, I'm not going to care about this in 5, 10, 50 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So just a little reminder
the 5-minute rule, man, is what we always go through, you know, it's just like, this doesn't matter in 5 years, then don't give it more than 5 minutes, you know, in terms of like feeling a negative emotion or something about it, you know,
right.
That's big.
It's like you lose. I just remember my wife and I were on this trip one time, we were in New Zealand and it was just like, it was a beautiful, beautiful place. And we loved the experience, but there was a few things that happened like 2 or 3 days in a row where it was just like, oh my gosh, what is happening right now? Yeah. You know, like someone stole like $500 or $600 out of our car. Like, so because we try to carry cash and we travel, you know, because it just makes it a little bit easier. And so we were staying in this hostel and somebody stole the wallet that had $500-$600 cash in it. And this was, you know, we were still pretty young. I was probably like 24, 25. So like $500 at that time is like, hey, that's my rent.
You know, go find this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So then that happened. And then like the next day I got like a speeding ticket. And then the next day we had to pay like $200 more for our bags on a flight that we thought we got a good deal on. It was just within 2 or 3 days. It was like, we were out $1,200, wow. $1,300.
Best vacation ever.
Yeah. And when we were trying to enjoy it, you know what I mean? And then I just remember at that time, I had just learned about that 5 minute rule. And it was like something that saved the rest of the trip, I think, in my opinion, because normally I would let that stuff just like piss me off. And I'm just like, fine, I'm done. You know, like fuck this trip, you know? And then, but then you start thinking about it. It's like, yeah, that sucks. $1,200, like that sucks. You know what I mean? But in 5 years, that $1,200 will not matter a lick in my bank account. Doesn't matter.
Even
none
year.
Of it matters. Yeah, yeah. And even a year from now,
yeah,
6 months from now, like it's gone. Okay. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do about it now?
Yeah.
We're going to like just sit and sulk and be upset forever. Like at what point are we allowed to stop doing that?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, give yourself 5 minutes, cuss, throw stuff at the wall, you know, punch the pillow next to you, whatever, you know what I mean? But just get it out and then, all right, let's
punch someone, move on.
Yeah.
Find someone to punch next to you.
Try not to punch a person.
Yeah. That's a lot of, you can get a lot of punching in 5 minutes.
Try to hold your punches.
More than one round people. In boxing.
Yeah. You, right? You're going to be tired before you get through 5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes in the boxing world is like eternity, yeah. Right? That's the whole round.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think also it's like, that was what I call, you just paid for life school. So what that is little tuitions throughout your life. Those moments where you lost money and you're like, fuck, but in that moment you learn something, you regulate your central nervous system, you let something go. It's like, oh, cha-ching, cha-ching. You're like paying life school, right? Yeah. You're just constantly paying the school of life, especially if you didn't go like go get your master's or whatever. It's like you in that moment learn something that now maybe the next time something happens you can go back to New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that,
because that does really suck.
Yeah,
you're like,
it's not
to
fun,
this beautiful place. Yeah, and you're like, oh my god,
just trying to enjoy everything. Yeah, and then it's just like, oh god, why is this happening?
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Oh my gosh.
So what do you guys do for fun around here in Austin?
Pickleball.
Mike is obsessed with pickleball.
I need something competitive that I'm not going to like absolutely damage my body.
Hot,
so I play basketball, but then I'm, you know, always going to get hurt.
It does like damage the body.
And so I'm loving pickleball. And then I don't do it in Austin, obviously, but surfing. I was just in El Salvador, you know, earlier this year, and I try to make trips out as much as I can since everything we're doing is remote. So yeah, surfing and pickleball for me are like my new outlets.
I wish I need to get into surfing. I always say that, but then I live here and I'm like, what am I going to do? Where am I going
to
find
you have to go somewhere for like 3 months just to practice it.
I love dance class right now. I got into dance last year and I'm like, why didn't I do this sooner? So I'm loving dance class. It's just so fun. I mean, I've always liked to dance, but like going twice a week now and making it a thing where I feel like it's such a like, I mean, it's proven like movement and then music. It's like very therapeutic. I feel like I leave and I'm like just amped up. Like, it's just the best. So yeah, I would say that. And then I make a lot of comedy, funny videos. And so I love comedy script writing. I love playing with that right now. It's been really, really fun. It's a huge like expression of mine that I just like have to get out.
Yeah.
So that's been really fun. So yeah, I love dance. I love making people laugh.
Austin's a good like place to
for comedy.
Yeah,
good
for
comedy
to
mothership.
Be in comedy.
Yeah.
We were just watching the other day Tony Hinchcliffe's
Kill
show.
Kill Tony.
It's oh so my good. God. Let's just say the bar is pretty low for going on Kill Tony. So I didn't know it was like people that were going up that were like that bad. So I'm like, shit, I'll go up.
Like, is it like open mic?
Yeah, but kind people, of you have to wait in the alleyway for like 2-3 hours, to like see if you get on and you get 60 seconds. And then Tony Hinchcliffe, who's just ruthless
just
in the best way possible.
You,
he's the most unapologetic person ever. And I love him. He will just tell you like, hey, bud, that sucked. You're the worst.
Like, just tear into you.
He just tears into people. So yeah, I really want to explore comedy more. And then I love dance class. And that's what I would say I do for fun.
What the mothership's great, man. Yeah. Mothership is great.
Oh, you've been? Yeah, you got to go.
Yeah, we went. So my wife's out here about a month ago, actually, because she was out here for a work event. And then also it was her birthday. So I came out a couple days early from the event. We just spent a couple days in Austin hanging out. So yeah, we went and saw Joe Rogan and friends and it was so good.
Yeah.
Brian Simpson went up and Tony Hinchcliffe went up. Shane Gillis went up.
Yeah.
And those are some of my Shane Gillis is probably like my favorite comedian.
Oh,
at the
moment.
Tony Hinchcliffe, I had not seen him do stand up like that. So he
crushed it.
You got to be ready for it. Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah. He's just so unapologetic. I don't think I know a comedian who's that unapologetic.
But just like alarming the stuff that he says.
Yeah. You're like, I can't believe you're saying
it. So funny. Yeah. Yeah.
But he's saying what you're thinking. So it's like, all
right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
That's usually what comedy is you're saying what people are thinking. You might as well just say it.
You're bold enough to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's crazy though.
But yeah, Rogan went up at the end, did really well. Mm-hmm.
But I love that question that you asked. I mean, your show has a lot of like successful people on it, entrepreneurs. I think that that's important because I think in any business or entrepreneurship, you lose hobbies or you lose fun. And that fun is like the fuel that then keeps you going and keeps that zest for life to even keep doing in the business. So I think it's good that people still find things outside of your job that don't make you money that are just so fun. Yeah. Like I don't get paid to go to dance, you know, but it's just, it feels so good.
Yeah.
And so I think that's important. I'm realizing now in my 30s, I'm like, oh, I need to like constantly still do things that just make me happy because they just fucking make me happy.
Yeah,
no other reason than that.
Exactly. Exactly. You get caught up in the rat race a little bit, too much. And especially in the social media world, you get caught up with what everybody else is doing and, you know, you start comparing yourself and, and it's just so true that comparison is the thief of joy. It's just, it zaps your happiness levels.
It's huge. I think it's one of the biggest things going on right now.
It's gotta be.
Oh my God.
That's why I've been doing a lot of reading on happiness. I probably last year maybe read like 20, 25 books and like three or four of them were on happiness. And then like this year I've read like four books and like three of them were on happiness.
Wow.
And, it's just, I've been trying to calibrate my life a little bit differently is like my point. The majority of the content that I consumed prior to some of these books has been just like business, just all business, entrepreneurship, how to make money, business, sales,
30X, market,
whatever. Yeah.
40X exactly. Your income.
It's the new rule.
Or else you're lame. Yeah. It's hard, man. You scroll and you're like, shit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You take this program, you buy that course, like almost 100% was all about business. And then recently I've just kind of been realizing that like, you know what? That's not the optimal way to live life if your goal is actually enjoying life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like obviously having money makes life more enjoyable, just period, hands down. There's no way you can argue that to me at this point, you know, because I've experienced kind of both sides of the coin. Having money is better. It just is. But it is clearly not the exclusive thing that brings happiness and joy and fulfillment, and in a lot of ways can actually be a detriment to those things. So that's why I feel like I've been optimizing more lately to be like, kind of what we're talking about earlier is like, what is 90-year-old Travis going to be happy that 30-year-old Travis did for him, you know? And so that's one of the things that I've been just trying to do more research around is like, okay, but what do like the happiest people do? Mm. You know what I mean? Not what do the richest people do?
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I find correlations between the two, you know?
Like purpose, community.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of those things. But one of those things is enjoyment and having fun. And for a while, I just kind of realized like, man, I think I forgot how to have fun.
Mm.
You know, it was super weird.
She never forgets that.
Yeah,
and she
helps
me with that.
That's good for you.
Probably too much.
That's good.
She helps me with that.
I'm just here to have fun and then I'm going to die.
That's great.
Yeah.
There's a couple year period, man. I
put that on my tombstone. She just had a lot of fun. I don't know what else.
Yeah. Well, that's a good realization though. Cause like, yeah, I had my kids, you know, and it was like, I just started a software company. I was raising money for the software company. I was doing like coaching and I had events and my podcast and all that stuff. I was still releasing 3 podcast episodes a week. And then my son was 18 months old and we had my daughter and she was a difficult newborn. And so like that next year after, especially like even after I, you know, raising money for a business is another one of those things that's like glorified, you know, but then like when you raise money, you got to actually go build a business afterwards. You know what I mean? So like, and for me, I didn't raise through like VCs or anything. I wrote, you know, friends and family type of thing. And so it's like when you raise over $1 million from people that you care about, it's like that level of stress to like go perform now.
Yeah.
Like that hit at the same time that like my daughter's like 3 months old and my son is like coming up on 2, you know, it's just like for 2 years, it was just like, I don't know where I am right now. Like, I don't know which way's up.
And you're still so young too. You know? So it's like, God, I'm too young to be
Well, that's to your point earlier about saying that I feel like I'm, you feel like my energy is that of an older person. Yeah. It's just like, well, that's cause it kind of is.
Grow up fast. Wow. Like,
but my point was to say that like during that time is when I feel like I forgot like how to have fun. It was just like, I didn't engage with that part of myself at all. Cause it was just like everything
needed stuff just needed to be done. And like, sometimes you just got to step up and get shit done, you know. But then, you know, we came out on the other side of that, and like, our kids now, 3 and 4, they're still really, you know, a lot of work, but we can take a breath. Like, we can actually sleep at night, and you know what I mean? There's semblance of normalcy.
Yeah.
My business is more mature. I have employees. Like, there's, you know what I mean? So now it's like, it was a weird realization to be like, what is it like just like to go like fuck around on the golf course with my buddies and just like drink beer for fun.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, that's got to, that sounds, we should do that.
So, that sounds fun list. I did an episode on this. It's called the That Sounds Fun List. And it's a list where you sit down with yourself and you could write anything. It could literally be like the smallest thing. Like, oh, I love this tea. I love this coffee mug I drink out of in the morning. Like, these little joys that bring you joy every day.
Yeah.
Because honestly, there's a Goop article about chase joy, not happiness, which is essentially about if you chase little bits of joy every day, by the end of your life, you'll look back and you'll be happy, instead of like, chasing happiness is sometimes chasing the big milestones, which then once you get there, you're like, okay. So, it's kind of like you're like chasing joy. You're like almost prioritizing your joy, which then makes you a better person in all areas of your life too. So I do feel like there's an epidemic though of people not having fun anymore. So yeah, the episode was on that Sounds Fun list. And basically I tell people to brain dump like almost up to 200 things. Like, it could be so stupid. It could be like, go to the zoo and like laugh at the monkeys. I don't, it could literally be like the stupidest stuff, free, paid, whatever. And then you can always like go back to that and be like, oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds fun. Like,
that's a good idea. I would do. Keep like a constant list somewhere.
Yeah, I literally have a list called That Sounds Fun. Yeah. Or, you know what would be fun if? And I just have a random brain dump of this journal of like random shit that I just think would be fun. And that's where I started with dance. I was like, oh, that'd be fun to go try dance class. I like tried it. So I think.
That's cool.
I think you got to create that list.
Yeah. And then go do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless making lists is on your list of fun things.
You could also just voice it to yourself or something. I don't know. There's no rules. Take some out of office gummies and make a That Sounds Fun list, and your day is going to be great.
There you go.
There you go.
I'm going to try some.
Yeah. Those are our new microdose THC gummies. So we know we have a lot of.
And this is Delta 9, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But very tiny amount.
Hemp derived. Okay. Delta 9.
1.5. So super, super small amount.
So I'm a little too dumb to understand the differences here. All I know is that if it's Delta 9 versus whatever the regular THC is that you can ship it, basically. Mm-hmm. So what's up with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wild loophole. The 2018 Farm Bill basically outlined that if the product is under 0.03% THC based on weight, then it is federally legal. So as long as it's hemp derived, which it is, so there's two plants under the cannabis plant. You have the hemp plant, which is very high in CBD and other cannabinoids, lower in the psychoactive THC compounds, and then flip that for marijuana, which is very high in THC and, you know, the Delta 9, Delta 8, all those different compounds that get you high, and lower in CBD and the other cannabinoids that are not psychoactive. So all of our products are hemp derived. All the products on the sole CBD side are zero THC. And they're all double third-party lab verified, because I was getting drug tested during the time we actually started the company. And like Angie said, we have nurses and people that care about that. And then the out-of-office side is the THC side. And so we can ship that to all 50 states because it is hemp-derived and it's Delta 9 hemp-derived. And we have some organic farms that we partner with and just an awesome process. So that's kind of the loophole there.
Okay.
It's part, you know,
there's no difference in the compound though.
No. Yeah. So there's really no difference in the compound whatsoever, which is interesting. In fact, even when you look at a hemp field versus a cannabis marijuana field, virtually identical, smell identical, look the same. Yeah. I remember walking through some of our fields. there's many moments where I'd walk through our fields and kind of like, be like, looking around being like, I feel like the DEA is about to like come down and like arrest me.
Like Ozark.
Look, yeah, I'm like searching for my exits. Like Ozark, I'm like, this doesn't feel right. I know it's legal, but like, I kind of feel like the white Pablo Escobar right now. It's
exactly.
Like, but yeah, so it's, I think it's been a great loophole for people. So our products are not in dispensaries. We don't have to worry about that as long as we stay under that legal limit, which we do. And so we feel like the microdose movement's really taking off, right? You talked about alcohol earlier. A lot of people are looking for alcohol replacements and they want to take something that they can still function, right? Like,
yeah.
We have kids, we have jobs, we have shit to do. I don't want to take a gummy and then all of a sudden I'm so high, I don't know where I am, and I'm ordering $100 worth of Chipotle on the couch. And like, I want to function.
Or missing your flight at the airport.
Like, we've all been at, like, all those things, you know? And so for me, like, you know, having 1.5, maybe up to 3, you know, it just takes the edge off. I can still function. We have a lot of people that work out after they take out of office. So... that's kind of like the breakdown of that in the compound.
Is it like a different like, is it indica or sativa or hybrid, or
it's a hybrid.
Does it have any of that?
It's a hybrid, and the goal there was, you know, we, if we're going to create a sleep specific, then we would go, you know, an indica or kind of play around with that different, but it's a hybrid, so it kind of just gives you a nice little easy buzz.
I've always been curious about that. I just never understood. It was just like, wait, I thought you couldn't ship THC. It was like, well, this is Delta 9. I'm like, okay, but it's THC, right? Like, it gets you high. They're like, and I'm like, make it make sense, please. You know what I mean?
The key there is hemp derived, right? So it's still Delta 9. Delta 9 in marijuana, Delta 9 in hemp. So it's really kind of a legal loophole. It's probably part the government not knowing what they're doing. Big surprise. And then part just, you know, the hemp industry lobbying to lift it up.
To be like, our this one's fine.
This one's cool, that one's not. But either way, I think it's a huge win because it's a fight against Big Pharma, you know?
Yeah, totally.
It's a plant that's been grown for thousands of years, and it's a fight against, you know, the powers that be.
It's the only thing that makes sense to me at this point. It's like, now, I mean, it's 2023, like, we are 2024. it's so well documented now that, like, this is a better alternative than so many other things that people are using. And if alcohol has been legal for this long, why is it just like, why are we still dragging our feet here? Especially you guys here in Texas. It's a little bit different for you here too, because like, they'll take it like pretty seriously here too.
They do,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you get,
and that's the beauty of this product, right? Is that once again, it's legal and it ships to all 50 states, and you don't have to worry, am I in a state that's medical, recreational, whatever?
Right.
I also don't have to like go to the gas station and get it from like a creepy dude.
Right.
It's like, you can go on the website. We have trusted third party verification. We have customer service. We have face behind the brand. My mom works at the company, so you know.
So
if we fuck up, she'll
pretty trustworthy.
I mean, they don't know that our mom isn't like some shady,
just like
you
a
know,
drug dealer.
Yeah, like what if our mom is like in Ozarks? You know, I love that show. Where it's just,
it is
like,
a great show.
That you're on the edge of your seat. You're like, maybe I could sell it drugs. Right? Like, it doesn't really look too hard. Show.
Our mom is not Wendy Bird.
Bird. There we go. Wendy Bird.
She's a savage.
She is.
Man, you get sucked into that. You're 8 episodes in, and you're like, I could do this. They didn't really get murdered. Like, they're hiding in the closet. You're like,
laundering money doesn't seem that
away. I literally said that to Clay one night. We were watching. I was like, laundering money wouldn't be like that hard. He was like, Angie, you would literally get killed in like 2 seconds. I'm like, no, I can do this.
Just on Zillow looking at Lake of the Ozarks properties.
Yes, exactly.
Our mom is Wendy Bird.
I got to go find my Wendy Bird to be my mentor. Well, listen, guys, it's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on. Is there anything that you would like to leave listeners with in terms of like where they can go find more of you, products, anything like that?
Yeah. Our website is getsoul.com, and same with all of our handles is get.soul. You can find us there, and then you can find out of office on there as well. And then obviously DM us with any questions. We love interacting with our customers. You know, so you find us there on social media as well. And Angie's got, you know, much more of a social media presence than I do, but mostly because she makes people laugh, but it's good though.
You're
I stay a little low key.
It's like, good. It's better for your brain. Trust me. Listen,
if I didn't have to do social media, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be, I'm just that kind.
I think
I'm in the middle of that phase right now where I'm just like, I don't know if I want. I love doing my podcast. But I don't love
the promoting of it.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about our show. We had a little season,
season one
called The Best Medicine, where we interviewed a lot of health.
Yeah,
and
go listen to
people.
That.
It was great. I loved doing it. I loved interviewing people. I loved having conversations like this. I personally did not like the promotion and
but you can pay someone to do that.
You got
to
do it.
The clips and the.
You got to do it.
I have a producer, and he's, you know, worked with me for several years, and he does all like my clips and everything.
Yeah.
I just hate
like having to worry about it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like you look at, then you start getting sucked into the numbers and the, are we doing, and then you start creating content for the numbers instead of creating content for how you feel about the content you're putting out. And it's just, you start letting the algorithms rule you rather than just doing what you want to do and letting it fall where it may. You
know
what
I mean? Stupid
but,
machine.
But it's like, we're competitive. We're like, you know, we want to see the numbers grow. Like that's a metric to tell us we're doing something right. And it's like, but I talk to so many creators now that get sucked into that rabbit hole and now they're stuck doing something that they don't even like doing. They're talking about something all the time that they don't even like talking about just because, well, that's what the number, you know what I mean? Like that's what
the stupid machine,
the algorithm shows me that that's what people like. So like, that's how I make my money. So I got to keep making videos about like, whatever, productivity apps or whatever. And it's like, okay, I guess. But like, I've done a few videos that popped off. And then when we went to go do more of them, I was just like, I don't do that. That's not what I started this for.
And people will feel that. People feel when you like what you're doing, especially as in the creator space. Like when the intention,
authenticity.
Yeah, they can feel it when they're like, oh, you enjoyed making this video. I can see it in you that you liked it. And that's why I like it, because you're laughing at yourself in the video. It's just, it is the same thing with stand-up. I love when they're up there and they're laughing at themselves.
Yeah.
Not because the joke was funny, but because I know they're happy and I like seeing people doing what they like to do. That's so, like, I always remind creators that like sometimes you do have to kind of like remind yourself to like, the algorithm's somewhat important, but not really. Like if you're truly in the joy, they'll see it.
Yeah. You can see when you lose that passion.
They'll eventually like, it's why people like Joe Rogan. Cause when he's sitting there, there's a part of you that thinks he likes what he's doing.
For sure.
And he's doing what he should be
like,
doing
he doesn't
with
give
his
a
life.
Fuck.
And that alignment in your brain subconsciously makes him likable. Because you're like, he likes that. And I like him because he likes that. And he's doing what he should do.
Even if I don't like that.
Even if you don't like
I
the
like
topic.
Him because he likes that and he doesn't care.
Exactly.
You know what
you
mean?
Can not like the topic, but still be like, I like him though.
That's why Norm MacDonald was so good.
Yeah.
He was great.
Just stayed in the pocket. He
that's
doesn't,
why
doesn't,
I
doesn't
shut
give
down
a shit.
My OnlyFans account. I just, I lost the passion for it.
Yeah.
Those toe pics.
The toe picks. I lost the passion for it.
Were they not doing well anymore?
It bought me this watch, but
actually how I found you.
That's where you guys go way back. You bought his toe picks for $70.
Bought his used socks.
Used socks. It's a weird world.
You get those on Soul.
Your toe guy 69? Oh my God. It's great to finally meet in person.
In person.
Yeah, we've been chatting
live
so
in
long.
The flesh. Wow. Oh man, I thought that was AI I was talking to.
No, this is the real. I was actually messaging. It was the real deal.
Mike does have,
but I had to shut it down.
Yeah. He has two toes that like overlap each other.
Oh, I know.
Hey, number one, this is toe guy 69 over here. You don't think he knows?
All right, we gotta shut this shit down. Okay.
All right, guys, make sure you go to OnlyFans and check out Toe Guy 69.
Oh man. Okay, so get Soul. Get Soul CBD.
GetSoul.com, baby. We bought that domain. We paid a lot for it, so please go to the website.
Please visit it.
Please, so I can stop doing OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Please support us.
Oh, man, it's been a lot of fun, guys. Thanks so much for coming on. Angie, you still have your podcast,
correct?
Yeah, Angie Lee Show. Okay, so go check out
Angie. And then add Angie Lee Show on Instagram.
And she's been doing that for a really long
time.
Very
unhinged. My goal is to just post most unhinged things, so
perfect.
Come on over. And some inspiration. It's a mix of both.
It is. I feel like I brought you on the show back in like...
Oh my God, 2018?
2018 or something like that, yeah. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But hey, you're always welcome back. This is a lot of fun. Thanks so much for coming on. Mike, it's great to connect a little bit more with you today. And I think we got some good stuff.
It was good,
Cool.
Great. Okay.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet, and leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming.
I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.